long last, after 16 months at Daly's Place in Jacksonville, AEW was back on the road tonight with its Road Rager in Miami, Florida, in front of a very lively crowd. Didn't take very long for some dipshit to jump over the barricade and try to get into the ring. So, welcome back. Welcome back to all the fans now back in the building. This is your AEW Dynamite review for Wednesday, July 7, 2021. I am the Solemn Monster. I hope you guys had a great 4th of July. Tommy End has come to AEW. He made his debut tonight in Miami. He said it on Twitch the other week that he was not going back to WWE, and a lot of people didn't believe him. A lot of people thought, well, his wife went back, and so it's only a matter of time before we see Aleister Black back on SmackDown, right? He'll just go crawling back just like Zelina Vega did. But he said, no, I have no plans of going back to WWE. I'm in a good place right now. And I believed him. What I was not expecting was him to show up this quickly on AEW television. That was a surprise. The fact that he would go to AEW and make his debut, that wasn't the surprise. The surprise was how quickly he ended up in AEW. But why would he go back? I mean, think about it for a second, right? Why would he go back? I guess you could say the same thing about his wife. But the way I look at it, here's a guy who was discarded like a piece of garbage. Discarded by WWE. Why go back? Right now, he's got a new life somewhere else. He's got just a new energy now where he can go apply his craft somewhere else and show them exactly what they missed out on when they let him go. There were a lot of people, reports that people in WWE were having second thoughts about letting him go, that they didn't want to let him go. They regretted letting him go. Good. You should regret letting him go. You see the reaction he got tonight when the lights came back on in Miami? How awesome was that? Unfortunately, there were a lot of people who made their debut on Dynamite in the pandemic era who would have killed for a reaction like the one that Tommy End got tonight, from Matt Hardy to Christian Cage, Brody Lee. All the people, Sting, at least there were some people in the building, but all the people who made their big debut during this Daly's Place era who didn't have the opportunity to come out and get the kind of reaction that he did tonight, that had to be a just fucking fantastic feeling for him. And it made for a great moment. That was the big highlight, really, of the show tonight. Made his debut tonight, as did another star, botched by WWE. He made his in-ring debut tonight, that being Andrade El Idolo. The tale of two stars. Which one is WWE going to regret more? Or will they regret both of them? We also had the first in-ring confrontation tonight between Kenny Omega and Hangman Page on the slow build to the championship match between those two coming up. I have to assume it all out. Talk about crowd reactions tonight. I've been saying it for months. I would get questions and super chats would come in sometimes asking me about Hangman Page. Does he feel cold? How can they fix Hangman Page? There was nothing to fix. It was a case of they didn't have anything for him to do. He cooled off a little bit. But I always figure when they were back in front of live crowds, if he could just get those reactions that he was getting pre-pandemic, that he would zip right back up to the top in AEW in terms of top babyfaces. And you saw it tonight. The people love Hangman Page. Hanging out with the Dark Order for all those months, it didn't dim their enthusiasm for him. He came out tonight and he felt like a star. He felt like a star, someone who hasn't sniffed the title picture in many, many, many months, probably over a year. In one night, he felt like a number one contender for the world championship. So this is going to be a lot of fun now watching him advance further and further to what I think should be a championship win. I think he should be the one. I've made that very clear. I think Hangman Page should be the next AEW world champion, and we saw a little glimpse of that tonight. And a pretty crazy main event. We're going to get into everything here. Please hit that like button. That's the first thing I need you guys to do, is hit that thumbs up. The Road Rager opened with the South Beach street fight between Cody Rhodes and QT Marshall. This has been a feud that has not exactly lit the world on fire. It has been something for Cody to do as they kind of bide time until his next feud. This was hopefully the payoff. This was the climax. This was the conclusion to the Cody QT Marshall saga here tonight. QT was trying to stall before the bell, and Cody attacked him with a tope out of the ring. They strapped up. Bell rings, and off we go. And Cody is whipping him with this belt. Now, they were going by WWE strap match rules, so you have to touch all four turnbuckles to win. So those are the rules they were going by tonight. I don't think I, honestly, as I think back to strap matches that I have seen, I don't think I have seen a really great strap match under those rules since the Steve Austin Savio Vega one from In Your House in 1996. Yeah, we've seen other strap matches since then. Not all with the touch the turnbuckle rule. I actually think it's better not to go with that rule, but I don't think I've seen a really good one since the Austin Vega match, and that was over 20 years ago. So these matches don't tend to be overly exciting. But anyway, Cody was exchanging words with Aaron Solo on the outside of the ring, who attacked him. So Dustin Rhodes ran out. Big pop for Dustin. He sent Solo packing through the crowd. Up into the stands they go, never to be seen again. QT uses the strap to give Cody a low blow. Starts choking him with it. So they go out to the floor. Cody, though, yanks on the strap and pulls QT into the ring post. And he goes face first into the ring post. He comes up bloody. So first match. First match back on the road. We already have somebody bleeding, and shockingly, in a match with Cody, it's not Cody. If I would have told you that Cody Rhodes was going to open up the first show on the road and somebody was going to bleed in the first 5 minutes of the show, you would have guessed straight off that it was going to be Cody. But it was QT. QT came up bloody. So Cody starts touching the turnbuckles, and all of a sudden, midway through, the lights go out. And I know there's a lot of people online who were wondering if that was some kind of a botch. Was that meant to happen? Because the lights came back on. There was nobody there. And the match just continued. But I figured either it was going to happen again during the match or it would happen. This was building to something, right? Because the lights, we've seen this lights out gimmick. I mean, we've seen it in wrestling a lot, but we've seen it in AEW a lot. They love turning off the lights, although I think it's been a while. So I figured this was leading to something. I didn't know where it was leading to, but I figured this was not a botch. It was going to be building to somebody making a return or somebody making a debut. But the lights came back on and the match just continued. Marshall used the distraction to regain the advantage. They fought up top. Cody went for a top rope Rana, but QT countered it into a power bomb off the top. And this was kind of funny. At one point, JR, who of course had that unfortunate faux pas at the end of last week's show, right before they went off the air, calling it WWE Dynamite, and everybody jumped on him because that's just fucking ridiculous, and it's not the first time that's happened. But anyway, he was talking here, and he was talking over Excalibur. And so very politely, he went to apologize to him, and he apologized to him, and he called him Mark. And I had to go to Wikipedia just to see if his name was, in fact, Mark, because at first I thought he was using it as a descriptive term, which I'm not saying he would be wrong if he was using that on Excalibur in that way. But I laughed. I said, did he just call him a Mark? And then I went to Wikipedia. I said, his name is Mark. So he accidentally called him by his real name. But I mentioned that because I didn't know that was his name. I thought he was using it as a descriptive term, which is actually a lot funnier. Anyway, Cody stopped QT from touching all four turnbuckles. So QT hit a diamond cutter. Marshall touched three of the four. Cody broke it up. And then he demanded that QT hit him. It's all fired up. He's telling him to hit him before he made his comeback, hit the Cody cutter. He went to go touch the buckles when QT hocked a loogie and spat right on him. Fucking disgusting. And Cody responded with three crossroads before hitting all four buckles in succession for the win. Cody Rhodes, not surprisingly, picks up the win here in this feud, as he should have, because we know who the star is and who the star is not. Fans were into it. I thought the match itself was pretty standard stuff. Wasn't anything really special aside from the fact that it was nice having fans in the building for that first big match back on Dynamite. And they like Cody, so it was fine. Nothing spectacular. I'm more happy that this is now over, right? They needed something for Cody to do. Now it's over with, and the key is Cody is no longer going to be feuding with these underlings. We now know who Cody's next feud is going to be with, and it ain't no guy low on the totem pole here. It's not some trainee from the Nightmare Factory. He's moving on up, finally, to a bigger name. It's about time. Shawn Spears cut a promo earlier in the day. He was in the back, and he was addressing Sammy Guevara, who he hit in the head with a chair the week before during Guevara's match with MJF. He said that it was Sammy's ego that got him in trouble. And all of a sudden, as he's speaking, this was telegraphed because, first of all, you could see the shadow of a chair coming at him, but he kind of looks over, and so he knew a good 2 seconds before this chair was coming, which is why the way this was shot, it looked really silly. But anyway, from out of nowhere comes a chair that got lobbed at his head by Sammy Guevara. Sammy opens the chair and sits down, and he says, "I got you, bitch. This is far, far from over." That was the segment. Tony Schiavone was in the ring to interview. Oh, we got a lot of Tony interviews tonight, but can you really even call them an interview? I don't think you can. I don't think you can really call these interviews. Interviews imply that you're actually holding the mic and interviewing somebody. The first attempt at an interview for Tony Schiavone, he was in the ring to interview the AEW World Champion Kenny Omega with Don Callis. And I should have started my stopwatch to see how long it would take before the mic got snatched out of his hand. I forgot. But it wasn't very long. It was maybe 5 seconds before Don Callis snatched the mic out of Tony's hand and told him to go stand in the corner. Loud chant of "You got fired," directed at Don Callis, which might be confusing for people if they haven't been following the storylines on Impact. I don't follow the week-to-week storylines on Impact, but I was aware of the fact that on Impact several weeks ago, Tommy Dreamer came out representing Anthem, owns Impact, and he, in storyline, fired Don Callis, who actually, in reality, I don't believe actually has power anymore in Impact. So it's kind of like art imitating life. But in storyline, he was fired. And the most shocking thing about this was the fact, as loud as this chant was, the most shocking thing about this was the fact that there were that many people in the crowd who actually watched enough of Impact to know that Don Callis was fired. Maybe they brought it up on Being the Elite, but that shocked me more than anything else. A show, an Impact show, that got 69,000 viewers the other week. There were that many people who were aware of the storyline that Don Callis was fired. So, Callis wanted to give everybody a history lesson. Thankfully, it wasn't like the history lessons we've been getting from Drew McIntyre on Raw, which have been fucking terrible. The history professor that he has been the last few weeks. He wanted to give us a history lesson and run through all the men that Omega has beaten before finally telling us that there's nobody left. He's beaten everybody there is to beat. And that was the cue for the Dark Order to come out. We had Hangman chants. "We want Hangman." And out comes the Dark Order led by Evil Uno. And Evil Uno goes, "What is the cat?" Well, actually, let's back up here because I skipped ahead. Evil Uno came out, and Evil Uno was there, of course, to imply that, in fact, you are not out of names. There is a certain friend. Why are you avoiding our friend? And this is where Kenny Omega asked Evil Uno, "What is the capital of Thailand?" And before Evil Uno could respond to that question, Kenny kicked him in the balls, and he said, "Bangkok, baby." Good Brothers and Michael Nakazawa came out. They attacked the Dark Order. Hangman's music played, and this is where he got the big pop. Out comes Hangman Page down the ramp. They had the elevated ramp, by the way, for the show. And Hangman comes down, and again, what a great reaction he got here. He dispatched the Good Brothers, and Omega was left in the ring all by himself, and Hangman was on the apron in perfect position for the Buckshot Lariat, and he waited, and when Kenny turned around, he didn't hit it. He stood there, and they stared at each other, and Hangman came into the ring, and they had a little bit of a face-off. Carl Anderson interrupted, and that gave Kenny Omega the chance to bail out of the ring. So this was the first face-to-face in-ring confrontation that these two have had. And it's going to take a while because I have to assume this is building to All Out and not a show later in the year. And so you've got, let's see, where are we now? We're in early July. All Out is 2 months. So you got 8 weeks. You're going to have to come up with a way to drag this out for 8 weeks. This was just the first part. But we are finally building to that big Hangman Omega Championship match that I've been talking about for months. I enjoyed this, if for no other reason, because it was great to see Hangman get that kind of response back in front of a crowd. I mean, you never really know. It's been so long. So much time has gone by. You know, did it cool him off? Tonight proved it didn't cool him off at all. People were into him, and people are ready for him to become the champion in a way they weren't ready for when, if you remember, he was the first man, one of the first two men to challenge for the AEW World Championship. It was him and Chris Jericho a few years ago. And in no way was Hangman ready for that position. That's why I said Chris Jericho should be the first AEW World Champion. Best decision they could have made. It was not Hangman's time. But that was 2 years ago. Now it's Hangman's time. The fans are ready for it. The fans want to see it. And I think they're going to get it. Earlier today, Jim Ross conducted a pre-taped sit-down interview with Ethan Page and Darby Allin. I thought this was really well done. I mean, this was not JR sitting down with Austin and The Rock before WrestleMania 17, but it was that type of interview, which frankly, you know, WWE did that in 2001. And outside of the, was it 2K11? They did that 1 year, that video game where they were teasing Stone Cold and CM Punk, and it got everybody talking that we're going to get an Austin Punk match, which we never did. But the video game company and Paul Heyman, they put together this great sit-down interview. And Jim Ross was in the middle, and it was Austin, and it was Punk. That's the only other interview of that kind with Jim Ross that I can remember since the one he did with Austin and Rock, and it baffles me that WWE never went back to that and did more of those, because that really is where Jim Ross shines. And I thought here in this one, not even so much for Jim Ross, but just I thought Ethan Page did a really good job, and Darby, you know, it was brief. It wasn't that long, but I enjoyed the segment, and I thought this was a really good way to explain exactly why Ethan Page is so angry at Darby Allin and why he wants to murder this fucking guy. JR said he was uncomfortable because both of these men have talked about ending each other's career. Thank you for correcting me. It wasn't 2K. It was WWE 13. Thank you. 2K11 didn't exist, and it wasn't 11. It was 13. So thank you for correcting me. I knew I botched it. You could tell I didn't play the game. But thank you for correcting me. But that was a fucking great sit-down interview. That got me pumped for a match that we were never going to get. But JR said he was very uncomfortable with these two men here talking about wanting to end each other's career. And Darby said, look, my first year in wrestling was Ethan's 12th. And it drives him nuts that when I came into wrestling, as young as I was at it, he'd been doing this for a dozen years, and in my first year, he and I were on the same level. And it drove him nuts. And Ethan Page agreed. He said, you know what? It did bother me. Here's this little snot-nosed punk walking in thinking that, you know, he's all that and everything. So I like that they went into this backstory, you know, pre-AEW of why Ethan Page hates this guy's guts so much and the history that the two of them have together. But he said that, Darby said that it wasn't his fault that Ethan was married with kids and never left his hometown. He said Ethan was a big fish in a small pond and he couldn't stand that Darby made it to AEW before he did. Ethan Page said that he plucked Allin from obscurity and he would probably still be living in his car if it wasn't for him. And he said that he brought Allin into the business. He would take him out next week in the coffin match. We never did get an explanation you know, even from some of the websites about why this match was delayed by a week. We had somebody write in one of the super chats last week, and I'm pretty sure they're pretty bang on as far as why they pushed it back a week, which is the best guess, which is given the situation with the building collapse in Miami, they're literally still pulling bodies out of the rubble of that building. It's horrible. Maybe not the best thing taste-wise to have a, you know, a casket match in Miami. So anyway, that's the most logical explanation I can come up with for why they delayed the match. But we're going to get the coffin match next week. And again, I thought this segment was effective. It was effective in getting the heat over between these two guys heading into the coffin match next week. We have Jake Hager, Santana, and Ortiz, representing the Inner Circle with Conan in their corner, taking on Wardlow and FTR with Tully Blanchard in their corner, representing the Pinnacle. This is building to an FTR, Santana, and Ortiz match. So they just kind of tacked on Wardlow and Jake Hager here, who actually got probably the biggest pop of the entire match. They're wrestling around for a while. They go to break. After the break, there is a cutter that allows Santana to get to Ortiz for the hot tag. Inner Circle work together to take out Cash Wheeler. Wardlow runs in to break up a pin attempt. FTR with the double team on Ortiz gets two. Ortiz countered a vertical suplex with one of his own and tagged in Jake Hager, who ran wild on everybody. Wheeler counters the Hager bomb. So Hager locks on the ankle lock. Dax Harwood breaks it up but runs into a big boot. And then Hager calls for Wardlow. And the crowd came alive. The crowd wanted to see these two big guys get back in the ring together. They had their MMA fight a few weeks ago. So Wardlow comes in. They trade some strikes. Hager tried for the ankle lock. FTR got into the ring, though, on a distraction from Tully Blanchard. Hit the big rig with the shatter machine for the win. So the Pinnacle picks up the win. Conan then attacks Wardlow from behind with the loaded sock. Still would love to know what's in that sock. Is it a roll of quarters, or is it something else? Maybe it's thumbtacks. But that was a really dumb thing for him to do. Hit Wardlow from behind. Wardlow turned around. He wasn't very happy. And before Wardlow could beat the hell out of Conan, he gets clipped. I don't mean clipped. I mean clipped in the knee. Although, you know, hey, it would kind of fit the gimmick, I guess. But Conan got clipped in the knee, chop blocked from Tully Blanchard, and the Pinnacle ran off. The match really was nothing special. Again, it's clearly building to FTR against Santana and Ortiz. The crowd was into Hager and Wardlow the brief time they were in the ring, so I thought this was it was fine, if not pretty unexciting stuff. Next up, we had the big face-off between Chris Jericho and MJF. And this is where a fan tried to hit the ring as Jericho was finishing up his entrance. He was making his entrance, and the crowd was singing along, and they didn't really show much of it on television, so I'm waiting to see if maybe there's some fan cam video somebody will upload it to Twitter or something. But fan tried to hit the ring, tried to go after MJF, quickly got taken down. MJF played it off well. He dared anybody in the crowd to try that. He said Jericho is here groveling for one more match. They were sitting at this long table, by the way. No master of ceremonies, right? They brought in Eric Bischoff in the past to kind of MC this. It was just Jericho and MJF, and they were on their best behavior. They were not attacking each other. It was just this long table and the two of them. Said Jericho's here groveling. Jericho says that he should have let that fat bastard come into the ring and beat MJF's ass. Jericho said that he would accept any stipulation that MJF were to put in front of him. Doesn't matter what it is. He would accept the stipulation regardless. He goes, I'll even have sex with your mother. Again. I haven't seen MJF's mother, so I can't comment on how I feel about this. But perhaps she's a very attractive woman. I'm sure this would be news to her, though, to hear that this person is on television saying that he would like to have sex with her. MJF was appalled by this, so was I. MJF said that he used to look up to Jericho. He used to follow every step of his career, including the Jon Moxley feud here in AEW. And he said, you know, As I think back and I remember to the feud that you had with Jon Moxley, he goes, I remember you making Moxley run the gauntlet and wrestle every member of the Inner Circle and have to win before he would be able to challenge you for the AEW World Championship. He goes, you know, and that was a great idea. And so what I've done here is I'm gonna take that as a blueprint, but I'm going to do what I do best, and I'm going to make that better. I'm going to borrow that idea, and I'm going to make it even better. He said he loves Greek mythology. Growing up, his favorite story was the labors of Hercules. Says Jericho is going to have 5 labors. And the first 4 will be opponents of MJF's choosing with unique stipulations to each match. He didn't specify if it would be members of the Pinnacle or just random people that he chooses. I would think it would be members of the Pinnacle. But each match will have a unique stipulation, and Jericho will have to win them all back to back to back to back. And if he can do that, his 5th labor will be having to get into the ring one-on-one with MJF. So Jericho accepted because he says, I'm the god of battle, I'm the god of thunder, I'm the god of war. He's going to beat MJF and ruin his life. He goes, and that ain't no mythology. Chris Jericho signs his name on the contract. He goes to leave, and before Jericho can leave, MJF stops him and he insists that they shake hands. He goes, the deal is off if you don't shake my hand. He goes, this is the way we do things in plain view. He goes, in plain view, Long Island, New York. I've known one person who lives in plain view. I knew nothing about handshakes. But he says, that's how we do things in Long Island. We got to shake on it. And so they go in for the handshake, and Jericho shakes his hand, and then he drops him with the Judas effect. I like it in that it gives them several weeks worth of television. Remember, we've got 8 weeks. It's July 7th. I believe September 5th, if I'm not mistaken, is the date of All Out. 8 weeks until the presumed match between them at All Out. You've got to fill television time. And how many more times can we do the Pinnacle against the Inner Circle? You know, 5-on-5, 3-on-3, 4-on-4. You've got to find ways to make it interesting. And so this is the way that they've come up with. And I think it's the best thing they could probably do to try to keep things interesting. And then I assume it All Out when they have their match, MJF would pick up the win. Because why would Chris Jericho beat MJF? Let's say Chris Jericho beats him. Then what? If Hangman were to win the championship at All Out, he's not going to defend it against Jericho. Where does Jericho go from here if he beats MJF? Well, what's in it for him if he beats the young star? This should be Jericho putting over MJF. There should be no other outcome to the singles match when that match happens at All Out. That is the only outcome that should even be considered for that match. We had a Britt Baker promo. In the back, she was with Tony Schiavone. The only person who will not pull the mic out of Tony Schiavone's hand is Britt Baker. That's why they're best friends. So Britt Baker was in the back with Rebel, not Reba, who was on a crutch. She did dislocate her kneecap last week. They popped it back in. I assume she's going to be out of the ring for a while. Not that she wrestles that much anyway. She's well enough, though, to be on the road. But unfortunately, she's back on crutches. So Britt says the only positive that came out of last week's match, where she ended up getting powerbombed through a table outside the ring by Nyla Rose, was that it was another win for her. But she says an innocent person, oh, look at this, Jared M. dropping $45 in the super chat of the night. I assume, I haven't been checking all the super chats so far, but Jared, thank you. Jared says, I grew up in Plainview, Long Island. Well, now I know 2 people who live in Plainview, although I don't think he lives there anymore. But see, now that makes 2 people from Plainview that I know. And I happen to like both of them, see? So I like Jared and the other guy, I kind of like, you know, we're kind of friendly still. So there you go. I know 2 people in Plainview. That's all I need. I don't need to know anybody else there. I know enough people who live on Long Island. And by the way, if you live on Long Island and you go around calling it Strong Island, you're a douchebag. So Britt was talking about ratings and how when she was in the ring last week, the ratings shot up to 1 million viewers. And she says the match only happened so that Vicky Guerrero could bring in Andrade to AEW. And yeah, that whole deal that Vicky worked out with Tony Khan. And so Britt Baker told Tony Khan to enjoy his blood money, saying maybe AEW could run a show in Saudi Arabia. Ouch. And this is the part where I would normally say again with a WWE reference, but I'll excuse it. I'll allow it here. You know why? Because anytime people want to mock WWE for going to Saudi Arabia, it's fine with me. She's not just going to send Nyla to the back of the line. She said she is sending her back to obscurity. And instead of Dallas being called the Big D, which has a lot of different definitions, but I guess that's what people call Dallas, right? They call Dallas the Big D. Now it will be called the Big DMD. Britt Baker was on fire with this promo. I thought she was great here in this segment. We then had the AEW in-ring debut of Andrade El Idolo out there with Vicky Guerrero and some unnamed male assistant taking on Matt Sydal. Andrade, I have to say, Andrade is in tremendous fucking shape. He's clearly been putting the work in his time off as far as, you know, in the gym. He looks great. He walked out wearing a black mask that he took off before the match began. He went for a top rope moonsault a few minutes in. This was a signature move of his in WWE and probably even before WWE, where he goes for a moonsault off the top. The person rolls out of the way. He lands on his feet, hits a standing moonsault, and then connects. And he hit that move here. And we have seen Charlotte Flair use that move recently on WWE television. So it is very nice to see Charlotte teaching Andrade new moves. How nice of her. She is teaching Andrade new moves. He's picking up on it. What new move will she teach him next week? Perhaps she can teach him how to do a shitty moonsault next week. This was a good moonsault. This one looked good. Andrade won with the running knees in the corner and his hammerlock DDT, which he is now calling El Idolo, for the win. I mean, that would be like me debuting as the Sala Monster and calling my finishing move Sala Monster. It's a little weird, but anyway, he won with his move, and then when the match was over, he took a leather belt and he tied it around Sydal's arm and yanked back on it in an armbar position. Until the referee finally was able to get him off. I thought this was a good first, showcase for Andrade. Let him rack up a few wins like this against other people over the next several weeks. Eventually, he's your TNT champion. It's only a matter of time. The only question is, what babyface takes the title from Miro? Because Andrade is not going to take the title from Miro. If anything, he would take it from a babyface. Who that babyface is, I don't know. We're still a ways off from Miro dropping that belt, but at some point, he will be the TNT champion. This guy, again, night one, I thought he looked good. I think he's a star in the making if they just keep building him up properly. I think he could be a real impact player for them on that roster. I mean, we're talking top five or six guy in AEW. He is a strong addition to their roster. And we've talked about his promos and how his English is not great, and I wish they would have gone with somebody else, somebody a little more outgoing, somebody a little stronger in the promo department when it comes to managers. But if he's going to be speaking and cutting promos on his own, the English has to improve. It's really his weak point right now. I mean, that can't even be debated. It is his weakness. It's his Achilles heel on television. Nobody is questioning his work in the ring. If you are questioning his work in the ring, then you have not seen him work. He is a fantastic wrestler. So I think his work is really what got him over in NXT. If you remember when he debuted in NXT, he looked like a fucking Chippendales dancer. He was out there with that dumb, stupid hat on, and I don't know what kind of outfit he was wearing. I mean, it was just fucking death. And then he changed his look, and they linked him up with Zelina Vega, and then he started having great match after great match, and that's what got him over in front of that crowd. That audience, that NXT audience, I think, is a lot closer to the kind of audience that AEW has than even the WWE main roster audience. So he has proven that he can get over in front of these people. It's his work that gets him over. He is a great wrestler. That's why I believe in time he will end up as being one of the top five or six performers on that roster. It's just a matter of time. Tony Schiavone was in the ring for an interview with Arn Anderson. And even Arn Anderson had to take the microphone out of Tony's hand. Clearly, it is his gimmick now. Now it's obvious that this is now the new gimmick. Everybody pulls the microphone out of Tony Schiavone's hand. Fine. They've turned it into a gimmick. But this was the biggest segment on the show. Arn is in the ring and he's talking about how great it is to be back in front of the fans here in Miami. And before he could really say anything else, the lights go out. He is interrupted by another blackout, just like the one that happened in Cody's match at the beginning of the show. Cody just so happens to be his guy. So the lights go out, and this time they're out for a little bit longer. And when the lights come back on, standing in the middle of the, well, not in the middle, but standing in the corner of the ring is Tommy fucking End. And he gets a tremendous ovation from the crowd. Yeah, I was just talking about Andrade. If you compare the two debuts in AEW for Tommy End and for Andrade, I mean, there's no comparison. This debut blew Andrade's debut out of the water. This is how you debut a new star on the roster. And a big part of it was, I think people were genuinely shocked. They were not expecting him to be there. The whole 90 days thing. And it, so people saw him and they weren't expecting him and they reacted like he was a big deal. And that's so important, because if he would have shown up and the crowd went mild and it went over like a fart in church, you only get one shot to make that big first impression. And if it's a dud, it's hard to recover from that. But he came off here like a superstar, the way the fans reacted to him. And he was standing there. He had some black makeup smeared on part of his cheek, his face a little bit. He had the one contact lens in his eye that he was wearing at the end of his WWE run. Monster pop in Miami. You know, the other thing about that, how good must that have felt for him, right? I mean, think about it. Here's a guy who, when he was in WWE, he was wrestling in front of the performance at the Performance Center in front of nobody. It's been almost a year and a half of that. So on the one hand, it's not just wrestling in front of nobody and then you make your debut and you've got this loud crowd, right? That's a big part of it. But just to get that reaction coming off being fired and being just discarded like that, it's got to be like validation for him. So there's nobody in that building tonight who was probably more amped up than Tommy End. I mean, he probably could have powered that entire building just with his own energy, the way he was probably feeling at that moment. It had to be a great fucking feeling for him. But he caught Arn with a black mask kick. Cody ran out, he got in the ring, and he was staring at Black, not even out of anger. He was kind of staring at him in shock. And then Black gave him the black mask. Roundhouse kick takes down Cody. Cody's down. Arn is down. Huge chant of Tommy and Excalibur mentioned the name Tommy End on commentary because the two of them have wrestled many years ago. They've wrestled in the past. So Excalibur is familiar with who he is. But then he said that that's not Tommy End. This guy that we see here, that's not Tommy End. I'm thinking, well, who the fuck is it? If it's not Tommy End, then what am I looking at here? But he goes, it's not Tommy End. He goes, that's Malakai Black. Malakai Black is his new name in AEW. And if you are wondering how Excalibur would know this, given that this man just debuted, right? It's one of those little things, right? It's like, well, this guy just debuted, so how do you know what his new name is going to be? It's like when Brock Lesnar came back on Raw in 2012, right? He comes out. He hasn't been there in 8 years. It's supposed to be a big surprise that he shows up. And as he's walking down the aisle, Michael Cole on commentary, he goes, what did he say? He goes, 6'3", 266 pounds. Like, he's reading off his measurements, and it's like, how the fuck do you know how much he weighs? You know, unless you were already prepared and armed with that information. It's just little minor stupid things like that sometimes that annoy me. But there is an explanation for it here, because earlier today, Tommy End posted a video to his Instagram pushing his this new character. And it's actually this weird vignette, too, where he's, like, locked up and he murders somebody. And Anyway, at the end, in the credits, it mentions the name Malachi Black. So, I presume in kayfabe, that's how Excalibur would have known, because Excalibur spends half of his day on Instagram, and he happened to see the video that he posted. So that's how he knew the guy's name. Me, personally, I see nothing wrong with using Tommy End. I would have just called him Tommy End. You had 5,000 people there tonight chanting Tommy. I would have had no issue with them using the name Tommy End. I think it works better, but I guess that's just not the character that he's going for. He's probably got this idea for a character, and this is the new character name. But, one last thing here on the subject of that. I saw people in the chat, before talking about this. What about the 90 days? How is it that he can show up on Dynamite when he was only recently released by WWE? When you get released from your WWE contract, you are subject, if you're on the main roster, to a 90-day non-compete, which means you cannot sign anywhere, you cannot appear anywhere, certainly not on television, for at least 90 days. I think in NXT it's 30 days. Sometimes they'll waive the non-compete. They did that with Andrade. It looks like they did the same with him. The only other explanation would be maybe, this is just me spitballing here, that one of the, his wife re-signing with WWE, maybe it was contingent on them allowing her husband to get out of his contract and get out of the 90 days. Maybe she made that request and they granted it. But it's equally possible that he made the request himself and they were in a nice giving mood and they let him go. So that is what was most shocking about it. Not so much that he would go to AEW, but that, today is July 7th, when he really shouldn't have been able to show up there until September or October. And it's great, because now instead of just sitting at home waiting and waiting and wasting away, the guy spent 7 months sitting at home wasting away. I'm sure he didn't want to sit at home for another 3 months doing nothing. Now he's here. No more waiting. He's on television, he can work, and he can move on with his career. And now he's going to have the chance to prove to WWE and to prove to everybody what they were missing out on and what he can do. And I'll say the same thing about him that I said about Andrade. If you've seen him work, if you've seen him in the ring, he is a great worker. The guy can work. As far as the Malachi character is concerned, I don't know how much creative freedom they're giving him. I assume he has more than he did in WWE. The vignettes that he has posted in the past on Instagram have been well done, so we'll see. We'll see where the character goes. But I'm very happy to see him. I'm happy for him. I'm happy he didn't just go back to WWE. Why go back to a place that doesn't appreciate what you bring to the table? This doesn't make any sense. His wife made a business decision. Good for her. I'm glad he did not go back there. I would have been disappointed to see him just go back to WWE. They don't deserve him on their roster. They had a taped segment they aired. Apparently this happened before they went on the air tonight. And it was Ricky Starks in the ring. He had security all around him to protect him from Brian Cage. Team Taz came out, all except Brian Cage, on the ramp. Taz was there getting ECW chance, and he was talking to Ricky and asking, "What the hell are you doing? I thought we talked about this. What are you doing out here?" And Starks made a crack in here about Brian Cage's wife, Melissa Santos. And Brian Cage came out, and he was beating up Ricky Starks' security. Starks in the promo claimed he still wasn't cleared to compete. I believe he is. But they're going to be having a match for the FTW title coming up. I'm gonna recap some of the matches coming up here at the end. We had Orange Cassidy and Chris Statlander taking on the blah, blah, blah. I had a short circuit moment there. I didn't know if I should say the Blade or the Bunny first, so I went blah. Orange Cassidy and Chris Statlander taking on blah. Taking on the Blade and the Bunny. Intergender tag team match. I believe only the second intergender match in AEW history. The first one being Cody and Jade Cargill. Actually, that's not true. I should know this because I was on the fucking boat. on the Jericho Cruise last year. They actually had an intergender match with Kenny Omega and, was it Sheeta? No, it wasn't Sheeta. It was Kenny Omega and Riho against, I believe, Kip Sabian and Penelope Ford. But on television, I believe this was the second intergender match. Although the rules here, as it was explained, were men with the men, women with the women. But this is AEW. And people don't really follow the rules all the time here in AEW. And that was the case here in this match because it got very whacked out. Orange Cassidy very over in front of the crowd, and he did his whole shtick with the bunny with the little, you know, shin kicks. Anyway, Blade tagged in. He countered the Tornado DDT from Orange Cassidy with a power slam. Orange countered the follow-up into a stunner before the women tagged in. So now the ladies are into the match here. That's right, Riho. If people in the chat forgot Riho. Have you all forgotten about Riho? Riho was the first women's champion in AEW. How can you forget about Riho? I almost said Maki Ito by accident. What the hell happened to her? We haven't heard about Maki Ito recently. But the bunny hit a knee lift. Statlander came back with a power slam, and she hit a delayed vertical suplex, as JR mentioned on commentary, British Bulldog style. Delayed vertical suplex here. Bunny rolled out of the way of a senton, and Blade grabbed Statlander's boot, which allowed the bunny to take control before they went into a commercial. They came back, and Statlander hit a falcon arrow for a near fall. She went up top. Blade distracted Statlander by attacking Orange Cassidy, and that allowed the bunny to hit a German suplex. Blade tagged in. He was hoping for a countout win over Orange. Statlander, though, goaded the Blade into coming in for the attack. Orange Cassidy made his way back into the ring, hit a crossbody and a tornado DDT for a near fall. Statlander hit her Area 451 splash on the Blade, but Bunny pulled Orange out of the ring before the referee could count three. Blade had brass knuckles, and he took them out, hit Orange Cassidy with a right hand with the knuck. Statlander, though, had already made the tag, so she was the legal person in the ring. She pushed the bunny into the Blade and then hit the Big Bang Theory for the win. The only thing I wrote here at the end was, this was a chaotic mess. I wasn't really a fan of this match. This was just a fucking mess. Earlier today, this was funny. So we were told that earlier today, AEW officials, they bestowed upon Jungle Boy a trophy. They gave him an award for being the first AEW roster member to 50 victories. And we had about 10 seconds of footage where, I guess before the show, we see at the head of the ramp by the entrance tunnel, there's Jungle Boy with this little nondescript award that he's holding up. This reminded me of when, like, Bill After would come out on the WCW shows back in the early 90s and give the PWI Wrestler of the Year award to, like, Sting or somebody, and they would stand there and take pictures, and it was like, all right, hello. But this was Jungle Boy standing there with this. He looks like a fucking child in school getting some kind of award on stage on graduation day or something. He just looked so out of place. Anyway, that was it. That was the whole segment. Jungle Boy has an award now. He could take it back to the wilderness, I guess, or wherever it is that he comes from. Tony Schiavone out in the crowd. Boy, they make this guy work. They probably pay him very well, but they make him earn it, the way they send him into the ring and onto the ramp and into the crowd and to do all these interviews and get abused. This time he was in the crowd to interview Dan Lambert, who was there with Amanda Nunez and Jorge Masvidal, two very accomplished MMA fighters. If you are a UFC fan, you know exactly who they are. But even Dan Lambert, the guy runs a fucking MMA gym, even he took the microphone out of Tony Schiavone's hand, because that's the gimmick now. So poor Tony went off, and now Dan Lambert took over. And Dan Lambert begins to cut a promo. And he said that nobody said anything about doing an interview here. And as he's doing this interview, he walks out of the crowd up into the ring. And he's talking about how he was skeptical about even coming to the show. And the reason he was skeptical about coming is because AEW sucks. I almost got the impression, listening to him speak, because he went on. This went way too long. This went on far longer than it should have. But he was talking about watching championship wrestling from Florida. That was real wrestling back in the 70s and the 80s. And he's talking about, you know, guys like Eddie Graham and Dusty Rhodes and Terry Funk. And he's rattling off all of these names. And he says wrestling has gone downhill really ever since the late 90s. And today's product is unwatchable. He's saying all the things that I say about Monday Night Raw. Says that Tony Khan told him that AEW is doing things the right way. He said that he's 90 minutes into the show and the lesson learned is that you should always trust your instinct. He's going on and on and on here. But I'm watching this and I'm listening to what he's saying and I'm almost wondering if they just modeled him in this segment after Jim Cornette. This just felt to me like, all right, we're going to take all the criticisms that people like Cornette make about our product and then we're going to send out one of our guys to just beat the hell out of him. And it would almost be like beating him up by proxy. That's what this kind of felt like to me. So he's really healing it up and everything. And Lance Archer comes out with Jake Roberts. And Archer knocks him down with a forearm. And he picks him up and he hits the blackout finish. And he lays out Dan Lambert. And that was the entire segment. And I thought that this went on way too long. But that being said, Dan Lambert is a great fucking promo. This guy is a real wrestling fan. In fact, he popped up on the A&E Hidden Treasure show a few weeks ago. He's got wrestling memorabilia. He's like a big belt collector and everything. He's a legit fan, longtime fan. But I was watching some of Impact years ago when he was there with, you know, American Top Team. And, you know, he was managing Bobby Lashley. And he was doing some, probably some of the better stuff on that Impact show. That was really my first exposure to who Dan Lambert was, so I already knew that the guy could talk, but I just thought this went on way too long. Great promo, though. The guy's a better promo than some people who are actually in the business. But I don't know if this was just meant to be a one-off or if this is going to go somewhere now, and they're going to have Lambert bring in somebody, like some kind of MMA fighter or something, to now go after Lance Archer. I almost wish they would, because at least it would give Archer something to do. We're right back to Lance Archer having nothing to do. They don't know what the fuck to do with this guy. I almost think, believe it or not, I think he would be better in WWE. I think Lance Archer is an example of somebody who would be better off in WWE. Because AEW doesn't know what to do with him, but he's got the size. And if you are a big guy, you are going to get more chances in WWE than a guy who is average size. Because they have so many of those guys already. Or if you're undersized. One thing you can't say about Lance Archer is that he is undersized. He's a big fucking guy. I feel like Vince McMahon would look at him and go, oh, we can make money with this guy. So I actually think he's a rare example of somebody who would be better in WWE than he would in AEW, because AEW has demonstrated that they just don't know what to do with him. Which is crazy to think about. You have a guy who looks the way that he looks. Guy's a fucking killer, and he could barely get TV time. But at least tonight he got to beat up Dan Lambert. We have the Young Bucks defending the AEW Tag Team Championship in the main event of the evening in a Miami street fight against Penta El Cerro Miedo and Eddie Kingston. The Bucks were out there looking indie-rific. They were wearing these denim shorts. Holy shit, did they look like something out of a fucking VFW hall. I mean, I guess they're supposed to be out there looking douchey, but this was on a whole other level here. Penta hit a destroyer to Matt Jackson off the apron through a table. So as angry as I got last week when I talked about the middle rope tombstone pile driver that MJF gave Sammy Guevara, who then kicked out, which was fucking stupid, that was not the finish. This is becoming an AEW pattern here. We have to have that one big move that should just finish somebody off, just kill them dead. And it's either a kick out or it's just a transition spot. Here, it was the big spot they did before they cut to commercial, the final commercial break of the night. But yeah, he gave this guy, and they gave three or four replays of it. He gave this guy a fucking destroyer off the apron through a table, and it looked great. And they come back from break, and it's like, oh, Matt's out there. He's wrestling like nothing ever happened. But there was so much going on here. I'll just try to recap the key stuff. The Bucks, at one point, were overwhelming Penta. They hit a Northern Light suplex. They set up for more bang for your buck. Babyfaces broke it up with a thrust kick. Hit a half and half and a DDT. Eddie Kingston locked on a sleeper hold, but Nick Jackson, who is on the top rope and he's trying to decide who he's going to hit, what's he going to do, he hits a 450 splash to the referee. He hits the official with the 450 splash. Just as Matt Jackson begins to tap out, that saves their titles because, of course, now there's no referee. So he saves the titles for his team. Good Brothers run out. They attack Eddie Kingston. Penta takes them both out with a tope. Matt Jackson tries to get Brandon Cutler to spray Penta in the eye with the cold spray, but Frankie Kazarian, the Elite Hunter, I just think that's such a stupid name. But Frankie Kazarian shows up from out of nowhere. He powerbombs Cutler through a table at ringside. Penta and Kingston hit the Fear Factor, followed by Eddie's spinning back fist, but again, there's no referee. He gets a visual pin, but there's no ref. So out comes a new referee. I think it was Paul Turner. He runs down to the ring, but Nick Jackson pulls him out of the ring before the three count. Again, saving their titles for the second time. Kazarian attacks the Bucks, but the Good Brothers take him out with the Magic Killer. Kingston then takes out a sack full of thumbtacks, and he pours them out. All over the ring, we have thousands of thumbtacks now in the ring. Penta hits Matt Jackson with a trash can. Penta and Nick Jackson fight up to the top rope. Nick Jackson hits an avalanche hurricanrana, and Penta lands right on the tacks, back and ass first, right on the tacks. Kingston breaks up the cover, though, at two. Matt's nose was bleeding in here. I didn't see how it happened. So Eddie Kingston eats stereo super kicks, and the Bucks threw a fistful of tacks into Penta's face, right in his eyes. And Matt Jackson puts tacks in Eddie Kingston's mouth. And Kingston then eats a super kick with a mouth full of tacks. The Bucks cover him and they retain their tag team titles. A wild brawl is what this was. This was a wild brawl to close out what I thought overall was an enjoyable episode of Dynamite. Again, I will always point out the stupidity of doing big spots like the one we saw tonight, and not having that either take the guy out of the match to make it 2-on-1 or just ending the match. This was in the first 5 minutes. Fucking dumb. I'm sorry. There's no excuse for it. But it was a wild brawl. It was, you know, it was fun to see Eddie Kingston out there in front of a live audience, which he hasn't, and I say live audience, outside of Daly's place. Doing his thing out there with Penta. So that was a lot of fun, you know, to watch him be part of a Dynamite main event like that tonight, going for the titles for the second time. Before, it was with Jon Moxley. So Eddie Kingston has not had a lot of luck challenging for these AEW tag team titles. But I mean, it's just a different feel being back on the road like this. This is what I was waiting for. This is what I was hoping for. It's just a different feel. It changes the whole dynamic of the show. And I'm kind of hoping that happens with WWE as well in a few weeks. I don't expect there to be anything as wild and ridiculous as this main event, but I'm hoping that it rubs off on them as well when they're back in front of live crowds. You know, we've been waiting a long time for this. That wrestling is meant to be held in front of a live, loud, boisterous crowd. There was an energy and a vibe tonight that's been sorely missing. I enjoyed it. The people of Miami were hot for almost, not everything, but almost everything, I would say, for a lot of things on the show tonight. And it was a lot of fun. I had fun watching this show overall. Now, next Wednesday on TNT, it is Fyter Fest Night 1 in Austin, Texas. They're going to the Lone Star State. We've got Darby Allin and Ethan Page in a coffin match 1-on-1. We've got Matt Hardy and Christian Cage 1-on-1. Which is not a match I'm really particularly excited for, but that's the storyline right now. They have those two. And we have Brian Cage against Ricky Starks for the FTW title. Penelope Ford 1-on-1 with the returning Yuka Sakazaki back in AEW. And the other big announcement is that Jon Moxley is going to be back. He has been off on daddy duty ever since Double or Nothing. He is going to be back, and he is going to be defending his IWGP United States Championship against Carl Anderson. And this is the other thing that I'm excited for. Now that they are back in front of live crowds on the road, it opens the doors for them to start doing more with New Japan. I feel like this is what they've been waiting for as well. And things aren't so great in Japan right now. In fact, I think they just announced another state of emergency. They extended it until August, which is going to wreak havoc on a lot of those New Japan shows, probably. But now that they're able to get on the road in front of different audiences, clearly there is a good relationship at the moment between the two companies. Hopefully we're going to see more in the latter half of 2021 into 2022. Yeah, we've seen Kenta make an appearance. We saw Yuji Nagata wrestling Jon Moxley. That was cool. But we haven't even seen any of the bigger names from New Japan making appearances in AEW or having a big match in AEW. That's what I'm looking forward to as well. Getting some of those big New Japan names in, seeing more of a relationship between the two companies. So I'm excited to see more of that as well. But the IWGP US title will be on the line next week. It'll be Moxley defending against Carl Anderson. What did you guys think of the show tonight? Well, let's find out. Let's check the poll. We do every week. Take a look at what you guys voted on. This is at Solomonster on Twitter. I have a poll up every Wednesday. You can vote thumbs up or thumbs down. And right now, thumbs up is running away with it. Roughly 90%. Thumbs up, just 10% thumbs down. So people loved this show tonight. But let me know in the chat what your favorite part, or maybe the part you hated the most, about tonight's show was. For me, it was the Tommy End debut. Very happy to see him in AEW. Very happy to see what he can bring to the table. And if he can become an elite player in this company. I think he can. I think he will. Well, let's go now to your super chat. Actually, before I even get to your super chat, there is one thing I do want to mention here. Not to put a damper on things, but earlier today, once my face gets off the screen here with this super chat, I did record a Sound Off Extra. I don't do these very often, but I do them when I am moved to talk about something that is important or that really pisses me off. Today was one of those days, and I recorded about a 15-minute long, it's not that long, Sound Off Extra on the Jimmy Uso arrest. Jimmy Uso arrested yet again for DUI. When is enough enough? I had a lot of thoughts about this. I made it very clear what I think and how I feel about the situation and what has to happen. So if you missed it, when you're done here, go check it out because I want to hear from you guys. I want you to leave a comment under that video and let me know if you agree and let me know what you think either WWE should do or what should happen. Because this is a real problem right now. And it's not just a problem for Jimmy. It's a problem for WWE. And it needs to be addressed. So go check that out here when you're done. Sound Off Extra. Giving you guys some extra content that couldn't wait until Sunday, although I'm going to talk more about that on Sunday, I'm sure, on episode 712. So, let us find out what you guys thought about tonight's show, and any other questions or comments you have, whether it's Jimmy Uso or whatever it may be, feel free to drop a super chat. Everybody who does, thank you very much, because you are supporting the channel when you do so. You are supporting me and what I do. And I cannot thank you enough for that. Bryant Becerra. Good Dynamite. The arena tonight kind of reminded me of WCW Saturday Night a little bit. Yeah, it was a small building. They're running a lot of smaller venues initially, which is fine with me. I actually think I like some of those more intimate venues. You know, you get a crowd of 3,000-4,000. Work your way back up to the bigger buildings like they'll be for All Out in Chicago, right? You can get 10,000 in there. But, Brian, thank you for the $10, man. Good to hear from you. Food Hive with the $5. My Wednesdays belong to AEW and this chat. Love this company. Jacob Donnelly with the $10 super chat. This was AEW, the AEW that I've missed. Great storytelling with Omega and Hangman, fun matches, a hot crowd, and a genuine surprise by Tommy End. I was not expecting him to be there tonight any more than you were, Jacob. That was easily the biggest surprise of the night. That and the fact that the crowd knew an Impact Wrestling storyline. I'm going to piss off all the Impact fans by saying that, but it's the truth. They don't have a very big audience, and so you should be happy, though. If you're an Impact fan, if you're Impact, you should be ecstatic that you've got this crowd of a few thousand people who are aware of the storylines that are going on your television show, which almost nobody is watching. That's something to be proud of. That's something to be excited about. Andrew Lima, I had to bury my grandfather today, and Monday Night Raw was still the worst thing that happened to me this week. Oh, my goodness. That is quite the low blow. Andrew, I'm sorry about your grandfather, but I'm also sorry that you had to watch Monday Night Raw. That is a double whammy right there. But no, I'm very sorry to hear that. It's good to hear you have a sense of humor. That is a hell of a burn, I have to say. I can laugh about it because you made the joke, but holy shit. And by the way, that was a fucking awful Raw. And I'm going to have, well, I have my thoughts on that on Sunday. I'll save that for the Sunday podcast. But put it this way. When the ratings came in today, the lowest rating in the history of Monday Night Raw, 28 years. That show has been on the air, never had a lower rating than the one that we saw come out today. It could not have happened to a better company for a worse show. It is well deserved. And I've actually been complimentary a little bit of some of the things the last couple of weeks. I don't know what the fuck happened this week. They're lucky to even have the 1.4 million that they got. It still puzzles me how there's even 1.4 million people who are left willing to watch that show in its current state. So that was a 1.47 million rating that was well deserved. But Andrew, again, I'm sorry to hear about your grandfather. At least he doesn't have to watch Raw. Andrew Jorlog. Black will be AEW champion within a year. Mark it down. Well, he's got a better chance than Cody. Remember, Cody can't compete for the championship. In storyline, right? He can't compete for the AEW world title. So Tommy End has a better chance of winning it than Cody does. Boombox Brock. We're going to see Brock soon on television. Mark my words. It's only a matter of a few weeks before the Beast is back. I feel it. I don't know this. I don't have the inside track. I just feel it. I feel like the Beast is going to be back imminently. Shiesty B with the $10 super chat. What's popping, my boy? A couple of quick bits I gotta dip. AEW needs to change their commentary team when they move to TBS. Also, Black having a different color eye tone is great continuity. Deuces. That is from Shiesty B. Rodimus Prime with the $20. Thank you, Rodimus. I hope you had a good 4th of July. Decent show tonight, but the debut by Tommy End was the highlight of the night. Absolutely. Casey is Raw. What's going on? $5 super chat. I enjoyed your Jimmy Uso video. I agree with you 100%. He needs to go to rehab or get fired. Enough is enough with these DUIs in WWE. Interesting that WWE has not commented. Every other DUI instance, they could put out that one-line statement, so-and-so is responsible for their own actions. WWE has been radio silent. They have not made a statement, not a peep from them so far. Very curious to see what SmackDown looks like this week, if he is on the show. He may not be on the show. Remember, the last image of SmackDown last week was Edge beating up Jimmy Uso. He had a metal bar from a steel chair wedged in his mouth while he had him in a crossface, so they don't even have to put him on the show this week. They could just write him off, you know, as being hurt. Are they going to write him off, or are they going to continue as if nothing ever happened, business as usual? I think the time for business as usual is over. We'll see if they agree. Ken terminated by DQ with the $5. Savio Vega and Steve Austin had an awesome strap match. The last great strap match was Eddie Guerrero and JBL in 2004. Has QT always been treated as a jobber? I mean, he hasn't been treated as a jobber lately. He's been feuding with one of the top stars in the company. Prior to that, I wouldn't say jobber. I mean, he would win the occasional match, but he was not a featured performer. I don't see him as somebody who really should be taking up much time on the show, to be honest with you. He might work better as a coach on television or a manager, wrestling occasionally, but I don't see, there's just nothing exciting or interesting to me about QT Marshall. I hear great things about him as a trainer and behind the scenes. He's a very important figure in the company, but on screen, I don't need to be watching him. Dry chicken without flavor. Thank you for the $5. There would be a fly on the wall in Vince McMahon's office if Mark Calloway showed up when the lights turned back on during Dynamite. We'll keep dreaming. You could keep fantasizing about that if you want. Mark Calloway don't need the money. It doesn't matter. Mark Calloway has a 15-year contract with WWE, so Vince McMahon would be seeing Mark Calloway in court if he popped up on Dynamite this week. And there's the fucking doll. At least we haven't seen Lily the doll for a few weeks, right? That's a good thing. Epsilon Sama. With the $5 super chat, Hangman looked amazing. Hope he becomes the champion. Also, I'm still waiting for Bryan Danielson's debut in AEW. I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's only a matter of time before when he's ready to come back, we see him in WWE. I think if WWE really believes they're going to lose him, that they are probably going to be willing to work out some kind of contract where he can maybe do some matches elsewhere. I don't know if that would include New Japan or not. I don't think they want to lose him. And I don't think they will. I think at the end of the day, he's going to stay where he is. It's just my feeling. But believe me, nobody would mark out more than I would if all of a sudden, after a Kenny Omega title defense or something, he's in the ring and we hear Final Countdown. And out comes Bryan Danielson. Tomas, thank you for the 99 cents. Appreciate it. Good to see you back in the chat. EJ Slemp with the $4.99. Fun show tonight. I listened to the podcast, and the only team not in your top five that surprised me were Edge and Christian. Are they in your top 10? Probably the lower part of the top 10. I didn't really map it out all the way. I'm more of a fan of the old school teams that I grew up on because that was a time when tag team wrestling was just so much more, competitive, I guess you would say. It was more heavily focused on. So we're talking about the Hart Foundation. We're talking about Demolition. We're talking about LOD. We're talking about Money Inc. We're talking about the Steiner Brothers. We're talking about the Brainbusters, Bulldogs. A lot of great teams. And that's just WWE. If you want to do wrestling in general, my God, Edge and Christian don't even sniff the top 10. So, level 20, Facto Tomb, thank you for the $5. PW Insider is reporting that a clerical error was the reason that Black was able to debut soon, as he only had a 30-day non-compete. So according to Level 20 here, PW Insider is saying that the only reason Aleister Black was able to appear on the show tonight was because WWE fucked up. See, 30 days sounds to me like he had the 30-day NXT non-compete, if that's the case. That's fucking hilarious. If he debuted tonight because WWE fucked up in the paperwork... Oh my God. How fucking embarrassing is that? Well, let's go see. You got me curious now. Let's go take a look at what PW Insider is saying. Here in real time, we're going to get a news update here in real time. Here it is. Let's see. So this is according to Mike Johnson of PW Insider. For those who are wondering, how the former Aleister Black could debut tonight for AEW just a little over a month after he received his WWE release. We have the answer. PW Insider is told that Black, when Tommy End was moved to the main WWE roster several years ago, the company failed to update his contract from the standard 30-day non-compete that NXT-level talents, what did I say, receive to the 90-day non-compete that the main roster performers are given. So what can only be described as a bad clerical error allowed Tommy End to be free and clear in time for the first episode of Dynamite on the Road and surprise everyone. The natural question is going to be whether other talents also had the same error, allowing them to appear ahead of the traditional 90-day non-compete elsewhere. Obviously, there is no way to know unless they opt to make that publicly known before they pop up elsewhere. Well, that is a very embarrassing fuck-up by WWE, and it makes me laugh even harder that he was able to just stick it to them by doing that. Good for him. That's actually better than any other explanation that they could have come up with. I love it. Although whoever put that paperwork together might not be employed very much longer once Nick Khan finds out about this. I mean, Nick Khan fires people the way that people sneeze. The way they take a breath. He doesn't have any issue getting rid of people. I don't want to see anybody lose their job, but we do that that Nelson laugh from The Simpsons. I can't do it the way he does it. Anyway, there's your answer. We now have the answer as far as why he was able to show up on Dynamite tonight. Jared M. with that $45 bomb from earlier on. Jared, you the man. I grew up, he says, in Plainview, Long Island. Ken terminated. MJF can lose to Jericho and maybe win the belt when Paige becomes the new champion, similar to when Jericho won the belt from Punk despite losing to Shawn Michaels. Very possible. Domination Warrior, if Roderick comes to Long Island, it'll be Strong Island. Oh, Roderick Strong, very funny. Cute. You got to leave the puns to Paul Heyman in the chat. He's the one that usually comes up with that stuff. Gary, what's going on, Gary, with the $4 super chat? Tommy End, Malakai Black has me way more hyped than El Idolo ever could. Do you agree? P.S. Pronounce my name right and I'll donate again. See, I didn't say your last name on purpose because I was worried I would botch it. That's why I didn't say it. But now that you've challenged me, I've got to look at this name. I've got to analyze it. I've got to say it in my head first. I'm going to say Gary Koshuk. I'm sure I got that wrong, but Gary Koshuk. That's how I would pronounce it. Uffman Entertainment with the $5. You had the Diva stopwatch in WWE, so in AEW you should have Tony's timer. See how long Tony holds the mic. You know what? Remind me next week. I might actually do that. Drop me a tweet or something and remind me before Dynamite, and I might just do that. I might have to start Tony's timer on these shows. Flamethrower Fluff Salisbury. With the $5. I love Black keeping kayfabe with the eye. Yeah, that was, I will say, I mean, I hated the bullshit with the eye in WWE and him with the fucking eye patch and stuff, but I appreciate the consistency, the character consistency. I can appreciate those little attention, you know, those little details there. Dry chicken without flavor. One of these days, Tony Schiavone will accidentally superglue his hand onto the microphone before he does his interviews with the wrestler. Well, that won't work because they'll just rip the arm off. I mean, you get a guy like Lance Archer out there, they'll just remove the whole arm. You know, we can't have Tony without an arm. Food Hive. Britt Baker won the AEW Women's Championship and WWE took a shot at her by posting a squash match with her and Nia Jax. She shot at them back. Fair shot. Good point. I forgot about that, but that's a good point. They did indeed, although some people said that was just a coincidence because it was Nia Jax. Was it her birthday or something? And I think that was her first match in the company. A little more than a coincidence, I think. Eric Nelson with the $5. If you had to start a new NWO, what three current stars would be the three that you think could pull it off? I don't know. You know, it's so hard. I mean, the NWO was like a once-in-a-generation story that just worked. Because it would have to be with guys who are coming from another company. But it's just, I don't think you can do it these days. Like, I don't think an NWO today would work. Not, you know, not the way that it did all those years ago. I just think people know too much. Social media and all of that, that hurts a little bit. Back then, you could believe. You would ask the question, wait a minute, are these guys really here? Like, I saw Scott Hall and thought the same thing. Is this a real invasion? I don't know that you could really pull that off today with people believing it. So it's not a matter of who can make the characters work. It's a matter of does an NWO story work? I don't think it does. But as far as who you would put in the group, well, I mean, it would have to be people coming from WWE who are now in AEW or from AEW who are now in WWE. They would have to be able to talk. I don't know. There's any number of people I could plug in there. You could plug in a guy like Aleister Black. Not with this gimmick. But you could plug in almost anybody. But does the story work? Can you convince people to buy into the story? I don't know that an invasion angle like the one they did in 96 would work in 2021. I just think wrestling has changed too much. That unfortunately, I don't think we're ever going to see anything like that again. I think that was a once in a lifetime story that just set WCW off on its path to heights that they probably never imagined they would be able to reach. Dr. NXT Scorpio. Just finished watching the hockey game, so I didn't really watch AEW. Oh, you watched the hockey game. According to Eric Bischoff, nobody watches hockey in this country. He said hockey fucking sucks. Are you implying that Bischoff lied? I don't believe you. Eric Bischoff would never tell a lie. He's an honest man. He's as honest as Bruce Pritchard is on his podcast. Come on. Anyway, he just finished watching the hockey game, but managed to see Mr. Black make his debut. God help Zelina Vega. Hope you and the chat are doing well. Oz and Glorious with the $5. Great show, minus the QT garbage. Love Black's debut, which was much, much better than Andrade's because he is not stuck with god-awful Vicky Guerrero. David Wilson with the $2. Lambert forming an AT&T, or not AT&T, an ATT, American Top Team, stable in AEW like in MLW. If there's one thing AEW does not need more of, it is factions. So no. I don't really have an appetite for that right now. Hulkling 93. Archer is more of a made guy than his first stint in WWE during the early 2010s. However, so is EC3. Maybe things could be different for Archer. Oz and Glorious. I know there's an AEW stooge monitoring the chat. With that in mind, sign Fuego del Sol. You would be surprised who watches these shows and listens to the podcasts. I will say no more. Carl Farnham with the $5. Do you think it's unreasonable for WWE to tell Jimmy Uso that it's either rehab or you're gone? Love the show. Keep up the good content. No, I think it's past time for them to say that. The only question is, legally, is there some reason that they wouldn't be able to because he's technically an independent contractor? I don't think so. I think it's a case where they could go to him and say, listen, you have a contract with this company. You are abusing the privilege of working for WWE. I feel like this is the kind of thing they would say. But you have a responsibility as a member of this roster and as not an employee, but as somebody who works for this company to keep yourself out of trouble and keep yourself out of the headlines. And for example, not get behind the wheel of a car and break the law. Now you've done this before. We've reached a point now where you need to get help. We will pay for you to go to rehab. We will help you. We will pay for you to get the help that you need. If he politely declines and refuses, WWE should be well within its rights to say adios and fire him. Not saying that they should fire him, right? I'm just saying, yes, they absolutely have the right to do that. Unless there is some legal reason that I am unaware of that they can't. You are representing this company. You are embarrassing this company. You are putting other people in danger. Get help or get out. If they want to make that ultimatum, they are well within their rights to do so, and I would not disagree with that at all. So we're going to see how they react, because right now they haven't said a friggin' thing. They've kept their mouth shut. They've been radio silent on this whole issue now. It's been a few days. Supposedly, people behind the scenes are very upset with him, but it's one thing to be upset. Action. When do the words stop and the actions begin? Martin O'Brien, I miss Brody slash Harper. I think a lot of people do. Would have been really cool for him to be able to be in front of that live crowd tonight when the Dark Order came out. Khalid Adam says, hello. Thoughts on the passing of Del Wilkes? I did an entire segment on the passing of Del Wilkes this past week. In fact, there's a video clip up on the YouTube channel right now. So right here on this very channel that you are watching, there's about at least 10 minutes, 10 or 12 minutes I did talking about the Patriots. So I would suggest you go back and watch that video. Ryan Spies, will Tommy End in AEW get him to stop constantly complaining about dirt sheets reporting facts? I sure hope so. As much as I like the guy and I want to see him succeed, boy, did he come off like a whiny fucking brat in that Twitch stream where he just lumped them all in together. He lumped all the websites and the dirt sheets in together. They all make stuff up and don't know what they're talking about. They're not accurate. You have people who do that and you have people who don't. And I thought it was very unfair of him to lump them all into one category like that. So hopefully he will not do that again, because it was not a good look for him. That was one of the things he kind of went off on his Twitch stream and said that I disagreed with. But that was very unfair. King of Doug style with the $5. Anyone who only knows Tommy End from WWE are in for a real treat now that he can show what he can fully do. Don't forget the like button, Solo Maniacs. Yes, please hit that like button. Good reminder. It helps with the algorithm. You are helping the channel out when you hit that thumbs up, and it takes 2 seconds. That's all it takes. Who we got? Who do we got? Who do we got? We got Juan. We got Juan Ocampo. Here's a cold Modelo for tonight. I think it's fair to call AEW star fuckers like you did with TNA back in the day. It's coming home on Sunday versus Italy. Is that soccer crap that you're talking about? I see people on social media talking about. Oz and Glorious, 1.3 million out of the 1.47 million forgot to update their DVR record settings. It hurts me to hear how much Raw hurts you weekly. Thank you for your service. I've always said I just want the show to get better, and somehow it just continues to get worse. How is that possible? How is it possible that it can continue to get worse? Just when you think you've reached the bottom, you push a little bit and a trap door opens and you go down even further. When will we reach the bottom? Is it 800,000? Is it 900,000? That's why I'm hoping that back in front of crowds, they're going to get the instant feedback from the audience that they haven't been getting now for over a year. I think that's what they need. Doesn't mean they're going to change, but they need that instant feedback. The fans aren't right about everything, but I would rather leave the decision in the hands of the fans about who's over and who's not, and not leave it in the hands of Vince McMahon and Bruce Prichard to make that decision. Isaiah, with the $8 super chat, as Vader drops that poor child here. Thank you, Martin, for your super chat. I'm going to get to you here in a second. Isaiah says, if Santana were to break away and go on a strong singles run, can you see him as TNT champion? Santana, hey, yeah, they even made a comment on commentary tonight. I think Jim Ross did. He's been in the gym. He's been, you know, working out more. He looks like a new man in there. He's been putting the work in. And as somebody who has had the privilege of calling some of his matches, he and Ortiz in, you know, House of Glory many years ago, he's the real deal. I think Santana could absolutely have a singles run at some point. And could he be TNT champion one day? Yeah, I think he could be. I think he could be. Dry Chicken Without Flavor, botch of the year from WWE. Bravo, Tommy End, for showing up on AEW. Gary, here's Gary. Wow, not how we say it, but that's the correct Ukrainian pronunciation. Did not see that coming. Well, that must be the little bit of Ukrainian blood in me. Actually, I have no Ukrainian blood in me, but I did eat at a Ukrainian diner down in the village in Manhattan many years ago. It's a 24-hour diner called Veselka. I hope they didn't go out of business with the pandemic. Great fucking food. So if you live in New York City, if you're looking for a 24-hour diner to go to, if they're still open, Veselka. You tell them that Solomonster sent you, and then they'll look at you and go, who? But, I was technically correct. I wasn't too far off from the actual... Well, you didn't tell me what the pronunciation is, though, that you use. Now you'll have to send in another super chat. you'll have to let me know what the correct pronunciation is that you use. Lakers Pats in the chat says, is Solomonster going clubbing after the show? Yes, I'm going to be clubbing seals when this stream is over. You got the Club Solomonster look tonight. This isn't even the best. I mean, this is nothing. This isn't even the best shirt that I have. All these shirts have been collecting dust here with this fucking pandemic and bars and everything being closed and stuff. I haven't been able to go out and, you know, chat up the ladies and talk AEW Dynamite and see what they thought about the show that we talk about Raw, right? That's what the ladies want to hear about. What happened on Monday Night Raw? I got to go out there and get the feedback. I got to talk to the people. How do I know what people are thinking if I don't go out and I don't communicate with the people? The best place to find out is to go to a bar or to go to a club, right? Usually when wrestling enters the conversation, which I try to make sure it doesn't, usually doesn't go very well. Or I will tell you this one quick story. I can remember being at a bar for someone's birthday. One of my friends was turning, I don't know, 28 or something. And I was wearing, what was I wearing? I was wearing, it was very casual. I was wearing like a funny wrestling t-shirt or something. And I'm at the bar, and this girl is sitting there with her friends, and she sees my shirt. I wish I could remember what shirt it was. It might have been like a Stone Cold shirt or something, right? And she sees the shirt and she's like, oh, hey, you know, Stone Cold, right? And so now we're having, I'm like, okay, all right, here we go, right? We can have a conversation now. This is great. So we start talking about the Attitude Era because she says, oh, I used to watch wrestling when The Rock was on, right? And she would talk about when The Rock was on, I would watch wrestling and The Undertaker, and she's like rattling off names of all these wrestlers, and I was very impressed. And she said, are any of these guys still alive? All she wanted to know is if they were alive. She just assumed they were all dead. Is Stone Cold dead? She knew The Rock was still alive, but she didn't know if The Undertaker is technically dead. But it got kind of depressing there, and I'm like, well, you know, yeah, most of them are still alive. She goes, do you still watch? And I go, well, yeah, not really. I was like, I don't really watch that crap anymore. And her friends are like laughing at this whole thing because clearly she's, you know, half bombed out of her fucking mind here. And I didn't know where this conversation was going. And then it was a case of she just goes, okay, what happened to Hulk Hogan? Now she starts asking me about Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior. Oh, my brother used to watch when Hulk Hogan was the guy, and the Ultimate Warrior, and the Andre the Giant, and Big John Studd, and he had the action figures and all this other stuff. And I'm just like, yeah, you know, those guys are pretty much retired or dead at this point. And she goes, really? She goes, Hulk Hogan is dead? And I just went with it, and I'll go, yeah. I go, Hulk Hogan is dead. And she seemed pretty, like, legitimately upset about this, and I kind of felt bad that I lied to her, but she kind of bought it. And then I just said, all right, it was nice talking to you, because my drink was ready, and I went back to my friends. And I always, I think back to that sometimes, and I said, was I an asshole for doing that? Like, did I ruin her night by telling her that Hulk Hogan was dead? But when I went back to my friends and I told them the story, they all laughed. I laughed. And I went about my night. And it didn't really bother me after that. So there is at least one woman out there who believes that Hulk Hogan is dead. And the reason she believes that is because I said it was true. So I take credit for that. And that's my bar story for the night. Where was I? I don't even know how I got on that story. But anyway, Gary, thank you for the super chat. Lakers Pat says I blew it. Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right. She was half bombed. She was there with her friends. It was probably some fucking party or something. I had more important things to do. To focus on my drink. Hulkling 93. As likable as you are, do you ever think you missed your calling as a heel? As likable as I am, I would debate that point. You should see some of the hate messages I get sometimes. I am not as likable as I thought I was, apparently. Apparently I'm an asshole. I'm a terrible person. But thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. As likable as you are, do you ever think you missed your calling as a heel manager? When fans boo you, I'm the Solemn Monster, damn it. I've said, you know, I think I could have done well. I would have been no Bobby Heenan, but I think I could have done well as a heel manager. Getting people to hate me, I feel like it wouldn't have been that hard. Eric in the chat says, was she hot? She was cute. The whole chat, Lakers Pat says, is disappointed in me now. If you're disappointed in me because of that one story, then boy, I better not tell you some of these other stories, or else you would really be disappointed in me. No more so than I'm disappointed in myself. But my bar hopping days are over. Paul Heyman, who I mentioned a little bit earlier, has showed up here. What if AEW brought in Mike Tenay for commentary? I don't think they need Mike Tenay, unless you're talking about putting him on Rampage. That could work. I mean, Tony Schiavone is already, I mean, it's ridiculous, everything they have him doing. So I don't think Tony Schiavone should be doing the commentary for Rampage. I don't think Jim Ross should either, unless they move him off Dynamite and put him on Rampage, which is something that I've suggested they do. So if they need a play-by-play guy, and they want to go for a new name, I don't even know if Mike Tenay would be interested. Mike Tenay has stayed out of the wrestling business. I don't think he wants the job. You know, just based on the fact that I'm sure he must have gotten offers over the years since TNA. And obviously he doesn't want to be involved, or else he would have been involved. You don't really hear much about him. He's kind of doing his own thing. EJ, how long has the 90-day non-compete been around? Because I remember Daniel Bryan wrestling indies right away after getting fired, or was that different? I think that was that might have been a different situation. That was a very unique firing, though. That whole situation was very weird. I don't know. But to answer your question, I don't know. They've been around for a while, though. Non-competes are not a new thing. Oz and Glorious, regarding QT Marshall. Who writes this stuff? Bruce, with all the question marks. All right. Did I say that properly? Bruce? How do I say it in the intro of the podcast every week? Bruce? Yeah, Bruce is not writing this show. Lakers Pat says, have the bar stories on your extras. I would consider it. Maybe I'll save it for our YouTube channel members. You can become a YouTube channel member, by the way. It's a good plug. Hit that join button down below this video. You'll see that white join button. We picked up some new members this week, which really made my day. I got to tell you, I was really happy to see that. We are only one episode away from having all 10 episodes, the first 10 episodes of the Solid Monster Sounds are from 2007 into the beginning of 2008. The first batch of 10 are almost fully complete. So if you want to go back and hear my earliest shows, they are up for our YouTube Legends tier members right now, and I'm going to be working on SE Scoops Live, the old SE Scoops Live shows that me and Noah Mark co-hosted. We did about 34 of them. They are not available anywhere else. I'm going to be getting those up soon, too. So my thank you to those of you who have joined the channel in the past few days. Pedro Velasquez, I truly believe that the old Yeller promo from HBK and Ric Flair before their WrestleMania 24 match was one of the best in WWE history. Do you agree? That was a great promo. And the Flair slap, he slapped the hell out of Shawn Michaels. That was a great promo. That really was. I agree. That is one of the better promos in company history. Thank you. Uffman Entertainment in the chat says the retro sound-offs are awesome. It's cool for me to... I don't go back and listen to them minute by minute, but like I was curious. So when I put them up, I have to edit certain things out, like music and stuff that was fine on Podbean, but it's not going to be allowable on YouTube. So some stuff I have to cut out, like in the intro and stuff. But I listen back to these shows so I can write a description in the YouTube description. And like on the most recent one, I was or two episodes ago, episode 8, I think it was, I was talking about Bobby Lashley and the way that Bobby Lashley should be used. And it's exactly the way that he finally is being used now in WWE. And then there are other things that I predicted that were so far off the mark. It's like, I almost want to edit them out completely, but I'm like, nah, just leave it in there. But it's fun to go back and listen to the old stuff. I just sound very, timid. Like, I didn't. And people have asked me about, like, when they start podcasting and stuff. It took me a while before I found my voice. That confidence in what I was saying. Like, I've been listening to the first batch of episodes, and it's coming along, but you can hear, like, I'm a little timid there at the beginning. You can hear, like, I'm kind of nervous. So, yeah, and it's interesting to go back and kind of hear how things used to be. But BW says, Lashley was an impact as their world champion. He was part of America Top Team with Dan Lambert. At the same time, Drew was there. AEW copying TNA. Hey, TNA was, they were the innovators, I guess, you know? Martin O'Brien, unrelated. Have you watched Bo Burnham's Inside? No, I have not. Don't know what that is. Dr. NXT Scorpio, can't wait for the Raw rant. You'll get one. Profane Gaming with the $5 super chat. If Adam Cole, Shayna Baszler, and Bayley formed a trios faction, they would be Adam Cole Bay Bay. Interesting. Thank you, Profane Gaming. That wasn't very profane. I was expecting worse. Gary. Cause Chuck. Okay, that's the pronunciation. Cause Chuck. I could see that. Slick way to get another donation. Hey, what can I say? What can I say? I'm a businessman at heart. But thank you, Gary. Mr. Cause Chuck. I do appreciate your patronage here tonight. Food Hive. Making the ladies sound off. She was doing a good job on her own. I was just playing along. Oz and Glorious, again, his message wondering if she was hot, and I said she was cute. Dry chicken without flavor. Good night, Solid Monster. Great bar story. Thank you, Dry Chicken. Food Hive. Jason strikes out, just like a Mets fan. Well, at least that gives me something in common with this team. Although they've been doing well, but again, it's in a weak division. But it's not like they're having their worst season right now. Amiibo. Thoughts on Corey Graves as an announcer? I think Corey Graves is good. I think he's a good announcer. I don't really have any other thoughts beyond that. You know, he doesn't annoy me the way that certain other people have annoyed me. I think that he plays up the heel part fine. He doesn't kind of overdo it. But I think that maybe if he were coming along in a different era and he were allowed to be, not quite as restricted as he is, he might even be a better announcer. But he's working within the confines of the WWE product today. And so that only allows you to really be so good. If that makes sense. Jared M. with the $11 super chat. Look at this. See, there is, that's what Daniel Bryan said that on Raw once. He goes, there is nothing about Monday Night Raw that is fun. He said that on Raw. They are self-aware. They are well aware of the fact that their show is shit. Jared M. Why does no one bring up the fact that Jimmy Uso might be mixing prescription pills when he is drinking? If Xanax, Somas, that's a combination for disaster and blacking out. Nobody is saying that because there is no evidence of that. So I don't want to start throwing around accusations about pills. No indication that cops have ever found pills on him or anything like that. So anything's possible, but there's absolutely no evidence of that. And I don't think anybody should be throwing around those accusations until there's reason to believe that that is happening. And right now, it sounds like it's pretty much an alcohol issue. But you certainly don't want pills to be introduced into that equation because that takes you down a whole other road. You know, that's far more dangerous. Alex Jimenez, your Michael Jackson rant was great. Thank you for the $2. That was episode 75 of the podcast, which is the one that I get asked about the most. Even after all these years, episode 75, it was a rant about something that had nothing to do with wrestling. And that's the one I get asked about the most, is the Michael Jackson rant. Which wasn't even so much a Michael Jackson rant, it was a rant on the coverage of the Michael Jackson death. It was a fucking circus. So, anyway, thank you. And Food Hive just had a super chat come in. It looks like you might get the last word here with the $1.99. Had Philly cheesesteak pasta for dinner. Well, you lost me at cheesesteak. You lost me at the word cheese. I'm sure it's delicious. I'm sure you had a great dinner, but I can't say that I'm exactly jealous. I have no interest in having a Philly cheesesteak or a cheesecake or anything involving cheese. Anyway, Food Hive, thank you for that super chat. Looks like you're going to get the last word here. Thank you to everybody who donated here tonight and dropped a super chat. As I tell you guys every week, I appreciate the hell out of you for it. It means a lot to me. And I thank you for that. Let's check the poll one last time here. We have over 1,100 votes, almost 90% thumbs up. That is a tremendous score. Better than Dynamite has been doing over the last few weeks. Only 10.4% thumbs down. So if you want to vote, you should be following me on Twitter, at Solomonster. Go over there and cast your vote. Abdul Rahman dropping a Russo on a poll, bro. Vince Russo said in a podcast this past week that he would not accept an invitation to the WWE Hall of Fame if it were offered. I bet you he accepts that invitation if it's on a poll. Then he would accept the invitation. But Abdul Rahman says, why people hate Dave Meltzer so much and calling his reports fake news? I know he said some stupid stuff, but his reports are fairly accurate most of the time. Yeah, it's just because people don't like him. and they let their bias cloud their judgment. He does get some things wrong. He's not infallible. You know, you shouldn't take everything he says as gospel. But there's a reason that he's been doing this for as long as he's been doing it. And for everybody who loves to bitch and complain about Meltzer and The Observer is the first thing that people go to every week. And when you go to a website like an SE Scoops, or you go to a website like, you know, some of these other ones that I won't name, where do you think they get the majority of their news from? They pull it right from The Observer. So they'll talk about him here, and then behind his back, they'll still be reading the news. So The Observer is still kind of the standard when it comes to wrestling news. But there are a lot of other people who are, you know, coming in strong. Sean Ross Sapp is one of them. You know, Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful is a tremendous source of information. Mike Johnson of PW Insider, very reliable as well. If you know where to get your news from, there are reliable sources of news out there. And Meltzer is one of them. He just doesn't get everything right all the time. And there is this perceived AEW bias. And look, he has his favorites. There's no doubt about it. He's got blinders on when it comes to AEW. But I don't think, you know, to use the whole fake news thing and all that is just, it's just fucking not. Anybody who says that is just a fucking idiot. When you paint with a broad brush like that, you don't come off as very bright. So, I'll leave it at that. But we do a little thing here. Yeah, Val in the chat says Wrestling Inc. Again, where do you think Wrestling Inc. gets a good chunk of the news they get? I mean, where do you think it comes from? If it's not coming from Fightful and it's not coming from something WrestleVotes tweeted, it's probably coming from The Observer or Figure Four Online. But then they'll turn around and crap on him and say that he's not reliable. So which is it? People can't make up their minds. Nathan Canny in the chat says, looking to get All Out tickets tomorrow. Any tips and wish me luck? Yeah, the only tip I could give you is just get in as early as you can. I don't know what the drop time is, if it's 10 a.m. Eastern. My suggestion is, however you're going about getting those tickets, if it's online, be prepared to log on at least 20 minutes beforehand. And if you have to keep refreshing over and over again. Whenever I've tried to get tickets in the past for certain shows, that's what I try to do. It's really the only way to go. You're going to have a lot of scalpers who are going to buy up a lot of tickets, unfortunately, and then resell them. It's happening way too much. But that's just the nature of how it is now. They buy up all those tickets, and then they make you pay more money for them. It sucks, but... Ryan Spies has a super chat coming in. Oh, Ryan might get the last word. Look at this, $4.99. It seems Tommy End and Malachi Black, or Malachi Black, might somehow be a split personality gimmick. If so, Cody should beat him because that sucks. I don't know if it's split personality or not. I have to go back and watch that video he posted again on Instagram, but we don't know yet if it's going to be a split personality. Or the guy just debuted on TV. We have no idea what the gimmick is going to be. So let's give it a chance to play out and see if it sucks or not. Right now, I'm just happy to see him land in AEW and not go back to WWE. Anyway, for those of you who missed it, go check out my Sound Off Extra. I put 15 minutes up on the channel earlier today talking about the Jimmy Uso story, and yes, I had a lot to say about this. But the key is, I hope he gets the help he needs before he injures or kills someone. That is not an outcome I think that any of us want to see. This is something that WWE is going to have to step in on and address. It's not enough to say that so-and-so is responsible for their own actions. They are responsible for their own actions. That is true. But he has demonstrated that he is not going to be responsible. So somebody has to step in and do something. And I hope it happens before something bad happens. On a more positive note, though, let me remind all of you that the Solomonster Championship Bell Contest is still open. That's right. You guys can win a custom one-of-a-kind Solomonster Championship belt. There's only two of these that have ever been made. I own one. You can own the other. How? All you got to do is go to WrestleRumble.com right now. You have between now and Money in the Bank. Between now and July 18th, it's only $1. $1 to enter. You can enter once or you can enter as many times as you want. How bad do you want that belt? That's how many times you can enter. WrestleRumble.com. It is the only place to go. You could own that championship. I want you to have that. It is a beaut. Take it from me. It is a beauty. Can't wait. I'm going to pick a winner at random during the Money in the Bank stream. It's going to be a lot of fun. Dr. NXT Scorpio, he wants the last word on Super Chats. He says, not today. So thank you for the $1.63. I appreciate it. Guys, this has been fun. Dynamite is back on the road. It is about damn time. And Tommy fucking End, debuting on Dynamite tonight. Here's hoping that he can find much more success than he did in WWE. I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with him. Until next Wednesday, I'm going to be back here live again with you for another Dynamite stream. Dynamite next week, night one of Fyter Fest from Texas. And of course, I will be live, well, not live, but I'll be with you this weekend for episode 712 of the Sala Monster Sounds Off. So I hope you'll join me then. Until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a fantastic night. And I will see you guys back here for more Dynamite next Wednesday. Thanks for the super chat, love. Take care, guys. Have a great week.